Today's reading is from Philippians chapter 4, verses 2 to 9. I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I ask you also, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you.
Thanks, Tiffany. Hello, good to see you. Yes, there's my daughter Evie again. I know we saw her 2 weeks ago. Sorry, I'm getting boring. If you were here then, I promise not to mention her again now till she graduates from university, okay? You can hold me to that. The reason that I wanted to get her in again today was because we had a baptism service for Evie at church this morning. Maybe you come from a church where they do call it a dedication or a thanksgiving. We were giving thanks to God for her life and praying that she'll grow up to know him. One of the things that I've noticed and really envied with our little children is the lack of anxieties that they tend to carry at their young age. So we'll all be fussing around trying to get ready for the day on a Monday morning. Evie just stands in the middle of it all with her toothy grin. Take her out in the buggy. She never asks, where are we going? Or is it going to rain? Or has everyone sanitized their hands? She just quietly sucks her thumb, her unsanitized thumb. And Evie's only worry in life really is on this next slide. It's this guy on the left. That's Bubba. That's the only word that she can say. That's her bunny, Bubba. And it is the only word she can say, but the anxiety level speaks depending on the tone of voice. So Bubba just means Bubba's in the room. It's great. It could be Bubba, ? Where is he? And it can go as high as Bubba, which is reserved for when older brother accidentally throws Bubba out the car window on the motorway. Anyway, even as the kids get a little bit older into toddler years, what I've noticed is there's not a lot that worries them. So our four-year-old sometimes barges in first thing and says to us, what's today? And I always really love that. What's today? You had nothing that was making you anxious the night before that would have meant you'd lost any sleep about the day ahead because you don't know what's happening in the day ahead. I don't know, maybe could you get to university and still be waking up going, hey, what's today? No clue. Well, if that is you, then I really, really envy you. But sadly, the kids only have to get a little bit older before they do start to have the normal fears. So it was just this week, I was preparing this, and on Friday, the newsletter that the school sent back on a Friday was advertising a seminar about managing child worries, supporting your anxious young person. Isn't that sad? That's not necessary for infant school children. But it's realistic, because of the world they live in, that we live in. Don't be anxious about anything. Just the word triggers, doesn't it? Even the mention of anxiety will be making some of our burdens come to the front of our brains. And for others of us, those burdens have never left the front of our brain. We'll get there in a moment. But first, a word about the context of this reading. Philippians, this letter by Paul to a church in a Greek city. He founded the church in the middle of the first century. And by God's Spirit, it's a word to all of his churches in every age. That's why we've been traveling through Philippians paragraph by paragraph over the last couple of months. And the thread that holds everything in today's reading together is the point that the battle is in the mind, which fits really well the rest of Philippians, where thinking and mindsets have been a big thing. There's a quote that says, "You're not what you think you are, but what you think you are." Sounds like something from a fortune cookie, doesn't it? Or could be a line from Yoda in Star Wars. "You're not what you think you are, but what you think you are." It's making the simple observation that what goes on up here impacts everything else. Your mindset shapes your life. Whether we're talking about your anxieties, your relationships, your priorities. And that's actually been a big part of the message of this whole book. It's why these final verses are not just nice but slightly random wisdom to finish it all off. I want you to have a look at 1 verse 27. Do you remember this key verse earlier in the letter? "Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you're standing firm in one spirit, with one mind striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, and not frightened in anything by your opponents." That's the kind of live as Christ, die as gain life that Paul's praying the Philippians will demonstrate more and more of, whatever happens to him. And each part of the reading of that verse that's highlighted there is directly linked to our reading today, we'll see. So the first point is about the side-by-sideness. 4 verse 2. "I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord." Don't mention the tension is the more usual British way. This is very different. And it is extraordinary. You know, Philippians would have been read out in church to the gathered group. It would have been a bit like standing up to give this sermon. Paul just names and shames two specific people in front of the whole congregation. Imagine I did that right now. Shall I do it right now? I mean, I don't even want to come up with a hypothetical example in case it's touching on some actual awkwardness. No airbrushed view of Christian community here. I wonder if you've noticed how small things can become big things that make people have nothing to do with each other again, even in church. Rivalry. Selfish ambition. These two had obviously disagreed publicly enough that it was appropriate to mention openly. We don't know what the argument was about, but you can see from verse 3, we do know that they were both at the heart of Paul's missionary team. They labored side by side in the gospel work. And that starts to make sense of why their disagreement mattered so much. Look at this picture. So that was from a real Premier League football match a few years ago. And you should look at it on YouTube. The commentators, you know, grown men who thought they'd seen everything in football, absolutely shocked, thought this was shocking, even for Newcastle United players, which is the team they play for. Not just shocking because they're fighting. Look, they're teammates. A team in that state is in terrible trouble. While the great mission of the church is to make Jesus known together, to shine with the character of Christ side by side as one. How can we shine to the world if we shun each other? So I entreat, word means beg, Euodia, and I beg you, Syntyche, to agree in the Lord. Literally, be of one mind in the Lord. Not necessarily one mind about who said what or what the motives were. Not agree that you're suddenly each other's favourite person after all. One mind in the Lord. Do you agree that your names are both in the book of life? Verse 3. Do you agree that Jesus is your deepest pride and joy? Verse 4. Do you agree that you still want to be like him? As we talked about in chapter 2, that self-demoting rather than self-promoting mind of Christ? Well, verse 5, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Sounds quite a boring word, reasonableness, doesn't it? Jesus was very reasonable, so you should be too. Apparently the word was actually used of monarchs who were gracious with other people's failings because they were secure in themselves. You don't have to be proved right or win this battle or make this point. Kind of a strength that you can carry when your identity and hope in Jesus are what validates you. You don't have to get your validation from fighting this corner when your joy and security are in Him. And I've been thanking God this week for our unity as a church family here at Euston. But definitely don't take that for granted. And let's get real about the fact that there are disputes here. Sometimes it happens in small groups, friendships, marriages, serving teams. Don't be shocked by that. It's inevitable. And if you are in conflict, big or small, with someone else at church, then the word from the Lord here is please, as far as you can from your end, do what you can to sort it out, to agree in the Lord. And I want to say well done if you're trying to do that, because it's not easy to when you've been genuinely badly treated. There's no glibness in this at all. Verse 3 is suggesting a forum for mediation that says this is serious enough, others will probably need to get involved. And our experience here in this church over the years is that it has been a great help when trusted friends or leaders have got involved to listen and to support reconciliation. Conflict resolution is never easy. But in Jesus, we have not only a model of forgiveness and empathy and serving the interests of others. Don't we also have the greatest of reasons to want to move on together for the sake of this great gospel cause? See, it feels like it's a battle with another individual that you're in. But it's actually a battle of the mind. What will your mindset be about that disagreement? Let's move on to our second point, which is picking up on another aspect of Paul's big prayer for the Philippians. Not frightened. 1 verse 28. Verse 6 here. Don't be anxious about anything. Really? By the way, I need to tell you that I'm preaching to myself here. I do get anxious about stuff. And my comfort blanket is my diary, which I don't really know why, but it's kind of like I'm worried. Maybe if I plan a bit of life, then everything will feel a bit better. And I'm actually so anxious that I've used the exact same diary from W.H. Smith's for the last 20 years. I know. My wife, just after we got married, kindly bought me a very nice, new, cool moleskin diary, and I said thanks, but I had to tell her that I would never be able to use it because I use the same diary every year for the last 20 years, and some of you are looking at me the way she did. That was the first moment in our marriage where she had a what have I married kind of moment, and I think she's had quite a few of those since then. Anyway, again, the battle in this is up here, whether you're an anxious person naturally or not. Having a mind that thinks differently should make a difference. No, he's not talking about clinical anxiety here. This is not a superficial response to what is a medical condition. By the way, if you're anxious and you don't know why, that is definitely the time to get help. They said in the statistics pre-COVID about new students coming to university, most freshers would have at least 4 friends who had mental health issues. That was pre-COVID. And worry is a spectrum, isn't it? It affects us all. It affects us in different ways. And you may have found that it affects you at different times in your week and in your life. Verse 6. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. I grew up going to a Sunday school and we used to sing this little song called With Christ in the Vessel, You Can Smile at the Storm. Smile at the storm, smile at the storm. With Christ in the vessel, you can smile at the storm as we go sailing home. Then you sail over that side. It's a great song. We loved it. Great ditty. Terrible theology. Christians do not sail through life cheesily. And actually, what we've seen in Philippians, there are more storms that brew when you actually are a Christian, because you've got these relationships that you now are more obliged to try to work through. You've got yourself waiting for Jesus, asking yourself, am I mad to think that he's really coming back? And then the opposition, the kickback you get from your course mates, from your family, your friends, because of the things that you believe. And then throw in all the normal worries about COVID, crime around here, singleness, marriage, health, money, climate change. Maybe you worry about your place in the cosmic scheme of things. Maybe you worry that there is no cosmic scheme of things. There's research about the detrimental effects of social media on mental health. And sadly, every single day this week, I've had a conversation with either a family member or someone here from church about a different, deep anxiety. Paul's writing from prison. Doesn't know whether he's going to live or die. That's got to be pretty up there. And it's not that he was just a personality that never worried. I really am helped by looking back at chapter 2, verse 28, where Paul talked about himself needing to be less anxious. See, this is not to deny anxiety or run from it. It is offering, though, more than your favorite comfort blanket, whether that's Bubba, if you're little Evie, or your diary, if you're me, or hopefully, probably, you've got something more interesting than a diary that you drown your worries in when you have them. But the difference here is that, for one thing, he talks to God about them, verse 6. All of them, big and small, in everything, his requests to God. But not treating God like a tradesman. You know, you only ring up the plumber or whatever when something's an emergency. Most people pray when they're desperate. Apparently Google searches for prayer rocketed during lockdowns. But look what's going on in Paul's mind as he prays. With thanksgiving, it says. See, he prays to a God that he knows is good, who has done good things for him, who has made him good promises, so that he can pray with thanksgiving even in the darkest pit. And it's from this place of anxiousness with thanksgiving that the peace of verse 7 flows. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Notice again the mention of the mind. This peace is not just a warm, fuzzy feeling. It's a deep assurance that comes from really knowing the person who you're talking to. And I'm aware, you know, all kinds of things can make you feel more peaceful temporarily, whether it's candles or beer or some time in a jacuzzi. I mean, all of the above would be quite nice, wouldn't it? They're all very nice, good things. But when you step out of the jacuzzi, problem's still there. I want you to imagine two pictures. One is a picture with a blob of light down at the front of the picture, but actually the whole rest of the canvas, darkness, looms. And then over here, another picture that has a blob of darkness at the front, but the big, wider canvas is a picture of light. Well, that first picture is the peace that the world offers. It's a moment of respite and light, but overall, things are uncertain and scary and death looms. In God's picture, the blob at the front may be a very dark moment. Let's be totally honest about how dark places believers can go to. But in him, the big picture is so much to be thankful for. Philippians, the big picture is Jesus, who is at hand, which means he's with us, he has served us. He is coming for us, we've heard. We will be with him forever. So can I ask you, are you talking to God about your anxieties? I don't say that glibly. And I don't mean just go into the prayer mode. Pour them out to him. Someone encouraged me to do that earlier this week, and I've been trying to. It's a great thing to do. And if you think you might be the most anxious person at Euston Church, don't let that be something to feel guilty about. Let it be an opportunity to become the most prayerful person at this church as you channel those anxieties into prayer. Maybe you want to pray with someone tonight. Why don't you come down at the end and there'll be the prayer team here. Someone would love to pray with you. Others have found that a great help today at the services. See, wherever you are on the spectrum of anxiety, and some of us are very far along with those fears of impending doom, this is supposed to make a tangible difference. It's one of those Bible readings, this one, isn't it? It's not particularly challenging to work out what it says or what it means. The challenge is all in the doing. And this final point is just one more short tour around the same idea for energy and motivation that we need. It's about our minds again. Have this mind among yourself. Mindfulness. Turns out the Bible's 2,000 years ahead of the modern idea. And it makes total sense that this is where we land, because it's so difficult to sort out relationships. And it can be so difficult not to be anxious. We really need to be in good shape up here. So what shape are you in your mind? We all think about something. Even Homer Simpson thinks, even if it's only about donuts. Well, for Christians, it's part of our discipleship that we think well. Verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Which means more than simply think about flowers as much as you can. Doesn't mean only watch movies like Bambi, though clearly some of the places we drift into online are not of the character of verse 8. This means that just as you plan to eat well, you need to plan to think well. You are actually in control of what goes in here. So the word from the Lord is make a decision to copy Paul's example on this one. Yet again in verse 9 he's saying copy him. And his thoughts through Philippians have been full of Christ. To live is Christ. To die is gain, because I'll be with Christ. So whatever is true, is there truth in Jesus? Is there purity in him? Is there loveliness in Jesus for you to ruminate on? Any excellence in him to fill your thoughts? When did you last mentally just list all the things about him that are praiseworthy? You'll never exhaust the list. Where is the space in your life to think about Jesus? It was great that midweek was mentioned earlier. I hope you've joined one of those groups if you haven't yet. You know, a week is quite a long time to wait before thinking about Jesus again with brothers and sisters. And then there's all the other ways we can do that through the week as well. Ask other people what they do. There's actually great stuff on the internet. It's not of the devil. You can fill your mind with online sermons. There's audio Bibles. Walk more. Reclaim some thinking time. Maybe Christian music is your thing, Christian books. However you are wired, you have a brain. And please don't do this out of a sense of guilt. Do it for the sake of more Christ-like relationships. Do it for the sake of more godliness and anxiety. See, we do make space in our life for the things we think are really important. Will you make space in your life, in your head, for some Jesus mindfulness? Think about him, and the God of peace will be with you. Amen.